Welcome back to Arts About, everybody.
Hello, Sully. This is a show about art, Sully, which is a work of art in itself.
It most certainly is. I always get really excited when I hear that little bit of that theme tune. I love that song.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Squirrel Nut Zippers, if anybody's interested. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio.
Yeah.
Hey, John.
What?
I've got a bit of news.
I know.
In fact, I've got a bit of a confession to make. I've decided to stand as a candidate for the Arts Party in the House of Reps for the seat of Dunkley, everybody. Yes.
Well, well done, Sally.
Yes. Well, we artists need a voice. We need to get out there. Look, I've done it not because I have a secret desire to enter the world of politics, but I think it's become imperative to do something to accept the unacceptable situation, to address the unacceptable situation, I should say, that we find ourselves in. I don't know anybody who wasn't horrified by the cuts to the Australia Council budget that George Brandis made last year. Slashing funding from the grassroots of the arts means mature organisations will eventually die. There's been a massive destabilisation of the in the arts industry, and it has not been corrected by the leadership change as many of us had hoped it might. And it now looks likely that the hope we had when Abbott and Brandis were removed has made no difference at all. This removal of funding means smaller organisations that include emerging and mid-career artists is seriously damaging the arts industry, and we're at risk of losing a lot more than they anticipated. If you kill the roots of the tree, it will die. So, at the risk of changing our charter here on Arts About, I'm tending to the political on the programme today, and I'm going to have party founder and leader PJ Collins of the Arts Party in to tell us why we need the Arts Party. So, after all that, my little rant, John, what have you got for us?
I'm not sure that I would describe it as a rant, Sally. I think what you're doing is very important. And,
thank you.
It's also very courageous, you know, sticking your hand up there. We'll see what happens. I've committed a phone faux pas.
Oh, it was your phone faux pas. I thought it was my phone faux pas. For those of you that couldn't
hear
it.
So, well done. And let's hope all that goes well. And I'll look forward to listening to what you've got to say about all of that over the next few weeks.
Thank you. Good. What have you got for us this week, John?
I'm going to talk about Frida Kahlo.
Oh, she's fantastic. Oh, there's... Yes, Frida Kahlo. Well, we adore her. Now, I happened to actually see one of her paintings along with a couple of Diego Rivera's at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art that reopened just recently.
I think the same show's coming to Sydney.
Yes, how exciting they are.
I love Diego Rivera as well as Frida
too.
Kahlo. Yeah. So I'll have a little bit of a chat about that. And, maybe... my little chat will drag us from Frida Kahlo into a dining room in Rye.
Oh, fabulous. I love a good segue. Now, you're also going to be talking to your friend Mark Stewart, who came on the show, I believe,
indeed,
while I was away.
Yep.
What's he doing?
Well, he's been down to have a look at the Country and Western show at the MPRG.
Oh.
And Mark is going to lend his vast experience with looking at art to... talking about what's on down there.
Fantastic. Oh, that's great. Now, of course, Cliff will be in to cast a few pearls at us as well. But next up, we've got Matthew Fagan on the line. We met Matthew a few years ago on the program, so he's a friend of the show already. He's a classical guitarist who's toured with the likes of Billy Connolly, Shirley Bassey, Natalie Cole, the Buena Vista Social Club, amongst many. On Sunday the 19th, he's got a performance called Solstice on in Flinders at the St John's Church with pianist Daniel Tucheri. So while I get him on the line to tell us more, here's a little of the Concierto de Aranjuez, Joaquim Rodrigo, arranged by Matthew Fagan. Matthew Fagan has followed in the footsteps of his grandfather Milton Parks, who toured with the Australian opera legend Dame Nellie Melba through the United States in the early 1900s. Matthew has toured with some musical greats himself, including Natalie Cole, the original Buena Vista Social Club, Billy Connolly, Shirley Bassey and Michael Crawford, and has entertained audiences worldwide. In 2000, he received a Victoria Arts Council grant for the new Celtic Suite, which has led to many other commissions to compose for orchestras. He's a graduate in music from the Victorian College of the Arts and Monash University and has worked and studied with the masters, such as John Williams, Paco Peña, Leo Kottke, John McLaughlin, Martin Taylor, Tommy Emmanuel, Slava Gregorian and others. He's back in our and his own backyard this month and performing with Daniel Tocheri in a concert called Solstice in Flinders on Sunday the 19th. Welcome back to Arts About, Matthew Fagan.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for coming back and talking to us today.
No worries.
Matthew, we've just heard a little of some of the people that you have played with. It's extraordinary, but we've also heard a piece, the Concierto de Aranjuez Joaquín Rodrigo, but I would really like you to correct my pronunciation.
Joaquín. No, you're fine.
Oh, was that not bad?
As good as my Australian Spanish.
That's fantastic. Matthew, tell us how Solstice has come together.
Well, actually, it's got a sort of ancient history. I'm a good 20 years older than Daniel. I first put the group together when I was first at the College of the Arts back in the 1990s, and I wanted to explore chamber music with concert grand piano and another guitar so we could play really big repertoire. Mm-hmm. It's particularly working with concert piano that I really enjoy because it's like having a whole orchestra at your disposal. And it gave me the avenue to perform big works such as the Concerto de Aranjuez of Rodrigo that everyone knows and loves, Villa-Lobos, his concertos. So it's just to explore other repertoire. And in its new inception, with Daniel Tocheri, who's a brilliant piano player, we've decided to do our own transcriptions of, well, rather challenging works. We've transcribed Beethoven's Fifth Symphony for guitar and piano.
Wow.
Which I think is a bit of a first.
It sounds
a bit crazy.
Are you mad, exactly?
With guitar, you have a passport to not just Spanish music, but all rock, contemporary, jazz.
Clearly classical, as it turns out.
Just recently, I've had this big love affair with Beethoven, and to perform that work well, I mean, even to put it onto one piano is a bit crazy. Yeah, it's just a great new expression that I'm really enjoying.
So what does Solstice comprise of? You've got music by a lot of different composers. Tell us who some of those are.
Well, I suppose it's a vehicle for me to perform concertos. So the earliest we go back to is Antonio Vivaldi. We've transcribed a mandolin concerto for guitar and piano. Then we've moved, of course, to the Rodrigo and the Beethoven. Another interesting aspect, what people are familiar with the Spanish classical guitar is originally written for piano by composers such as Isaac Albéniz, Enrique Granados.
Did you say they were written for piano?
Yes.
Wow.
And what's interesting is Albéniz himself wanted to do his impressions of Spanish, you know, folk music, as many classical composers. I mean, Beethoven both based a lot of his themes on folk music. But as Albéniz travelled through the different regions, and hence the Sweet Iberia, and the pieces have names such as Asturias or Seville, you know, that describe the towns or the regions of Spain. Mm. But he was often hearing the music played on guitars. So I've done a funny thing, like everyone knows the Asturias or Leyenda by Albéniz on the Spanish guitar, but it's originally written for piano, so we're actually playing it together, so you get the whole...
Ah, that's fantastic. A lot of people would be very interested that you are actually a local, aren't you, Matthew?
Well, I grew up in Sandringham, so that's...
Yep. That's pretty local. We call that local around here. You're a Melbourne boy.
But my guitars are definitely local. I play handmade classical guitars by the great Australian luthier Richard Howe. And I've got one guitar that goes back a long way. That was his number 187. And now, particularly in this concert, I'll be performing on a handmade 10-string Spanish guitar. It has four extra bass.
And is he still creating instruments?
Oh, most definitely. Mm-hmm. My 10-string is guitar number 435, and these are all handmade.
And where does he work?
From in Mornington.
You're kidding me. So he's a very, very local man. How extraordinary.
And his guitars go all around the world. One of Richard's guitars was selected to celebrate the life of Rodrigo, actually. He was, and his guitar was flown over to
How remarkable. Is he going to be a guest of honour at your performance, do you think?
Oh, yes. I can't keep Richard away. I hope you're listening.
Richard, if you're out there, we're very excited to hear about you. This is rather remarkable. I'd love to follow that up perhaps and get to talk to him at some point in the future. Matthew, you've got a performance this coming up on the 19th, Sunday at St John's Church in Flinders. You've performed there quite a few times, haven't you?
Twice, mm-hmm. And had a fantastic time there. A perfect acoustic, a really great intimate atmosphere.
It's a beautiful church for music, that's right, it is.
And they have a great concert piano, so we wanted, this time I'm coming back to do something quite different, obviously, with Daniel.
Yeah.
And there'll be a few little extra pieces too to what's described in the program.
Well, I think it's on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. How do people get tickets?
Well, the best way is to phone 5320 5858.
Yep.
Oh, no, sorry. That's a different concert I'm talking about.
Don't phone that number, everybody. We've got another number.
That's
scratch that out if you've written that down. What's the number, Matthew?
043.
Yes.
888.
Yes.
1985.
Great.
043-888-1985. Or just go to my website, Matthew-Fagan.
Fabulous. I'll put a link to that on our Facebook page. It sounds fantastic. I think that anybody who's interested in classical music, Spanish music, guitars, that will be an absolutely magnificent concert. It's called
and
Solstice.
And couldn't choose a better venue than the church in Flinders.
That's right. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Matthew Fagan. Good luck with it.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, hopefully the times are changing, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, I've joined the Arts Party and I'm standing in the seat of Dunkley in the House of Reps for it, because I think it's really important that ordinary people speak up when they believe that something is not right. It's not nice to be forced into the public eye, but sometimes you have to do what is right. Those in the arts have been doing it forever. Natalie Maines and the Dixie Chicks spoke up in opposition to the Iraq War. They were denounced in the US at the time and it cost them their musical careers. But they were right, and now they have been proven right. Bob Dylan wrote songs of protest about war and racial discrimination. Joan Baez is still doing it. Muhammad Ali was a lone, brave voice against the Vietnam War, and he eventually turned a country around. Picasso created his huge painting Guernica in protest about the atrocities of war. But this time the arts are under attack in Australia. There's a war being waged on our creative industries, and ordinary people need to stand up and object. We need to let the suits in Canberra know that they have undervalued the arts for too long. And so I wanted to take the opportunity to shed light on a political party that has formed here in Australia as a result of this war. And so I have party leader and founder of the Arts Party, filmmaker PJ Collins, on the line to tell us why he formed the Arts Party and why you should consider supporting them. Good morning, PJ.
Good morning, Sally.
Thank you so much for coming on the program today.
A pleasure.
PJ, why do we need the Arts Party and what do you hope to achieve from its formation?
Well, at the centre of it is the need for fresh voices in our democracy. We've got a very limited number of options, really, in terms of the major parties, and it's really important at this point, in particular, around, as you say, the arts and the creative industries in this country. There's a clear need right now for us to fix a major problem with the treatment and valuing of what is essentially a key part of who we are and how we see ourselves. So it goes from the very beginning in terms of primary school access, mandatory music and visual art and media art lessons as early as possible. The development of us, like, there are so many benefits all the way through our lives by engaging in community events and artistic and cultural activity. And, of course, then the creative industries, which are the industries of the future.
Yeah, that's right.
They grow directly out of this. So for us, the arts is absolutely should be central in the innovation agenda for this country, because undoubtedly it has a huge impact on everything we do.
Yeah. Now, artists don't tend to the political generally. So tell me, how did the party come into existence in the first place?
Well, it came into existence after the last election, or a little while afterwards. I've had quite a long history of volunteering at community events and festivals, and I'd helped out in Sydney in the Coogee Arts Festival and also in the Australian Film Festival, and I found myself with a very good friend of mine who had actually set up both of those, and over beers one evening we discussed why is this such so hard. It's like getting blood out of a stone to get money from the council, state government for community cultural events. Like, why is the music scene so hard to find live music in Sydney anymore? And then we moved on to the film industry. It's like, why, with such amazing cast and crew, why do we make so few films? And why do Australians most of the time seem to run from Australian film? There's something basically wrong with what we're doing in this country. Yeah. And the truth is that we're just simply not supporting all of these outlets and all of these incredibly important parts of our lives properly. And the bottom line is that the politicians simply don't think that there's any votes in the arts. And so we realise that essentially, instead of forever being the last thing in the line of looking for a handout from government, the only way for the arts to get out of the huge hole it's in this country right now is to actually get political itself.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
I'm sure many, many people have sat in the pub and had the idea of, let's start an arts party, like thousands of them over the years, but it's just never have gone and taken the next step. And I just happen to think the next day, that's a really good idea. Let's give it a go. And crowdfunded. So
I know, that's right. It's so fantastic. Well, this is how I heard about you in the first place too, from crowdfunding. Tell me, if you were to describe it very quickly, what would you say are the absolute core principles?
Oh, the core principles, absolutely. More support for the arts across the board in all our lives. So, you know, as I say, from the very beginning of our lives, and as audience members or as artists, as venues. I mean, the audience is absolutely key to the artist. The artist is key to the audience. We're all in this together. Then, of course, supporting the creative industries. I mean, undoubtedly, whether it be fashion or design or, you know, video games making or architecture, or there's a thousand different creative industries out there, creative businesses and types of business. We have to be using our brains to come up with value in the future. So we just can't keep digging money out of the ground. We've got to start digging it out of our minds, and that's what creative industries are all about. Education, access for everyone. Mm. I mean, we think that investing in education is like the most important thing that we can do to make us constructive members of society, and that's through our whole life. So really, ongoing, affordable, quality learning for all Australians. And then, of course, community involvement. So strengthening and celebrating our communities across the country. I mean, there's so many of them, and there's so many people from so many places, and we should really, you know, by celebrating our differences, it actually brings us together.
Tell me, why are the arts such a soft target? It seems as soon as the purse strings get tight, they're the first things to be hit. Do you think, have we got an image problem that we need to address?
Yes, I think it's, from having come into this as somebody who wasn't, I came into it being a filmmaker, loving to work with actors and crew to tell stories and to share those stories. That was my angle. I've never had a career in arts administration. I'm very aware that the arts it's like a divide and conquer way of treating it, because essentially there's so many different corners of the arts. There's such a bizarre pecking order in the arts, and I find it quite strange, because for me, as essentially an audience member looking in, I look at it and think all arts are valid. Every form is valid, and every form needs to be supported, because what may work for you may not work for me. And the point is that there's such a diversity. There's a reason why all of these different forms are there, because they do connect with people. So I think that there's just something about, you know, the fact is that because there's no kind of like focused lobbying power for the arts, and the arts can be so fractured internally, it just makes it a very easy target to basically chop away at. And, you know, the truth is that actually all these cuts have done more for uniting the arts than anything else has over the last however many years. Because the truth is, everyone is feeling this severe pain of being down to the bone already, and now having to literally, like, people, you know, just business organisations are just closing across the country right now, and it's a serious, serious issue for the future.
Yes, it is.
And the problem is that most people aren't even aware it's happening until it's too late.
No.
And then, you know, youth theatres disappeared, Dance Australia, well, you know, the whole state of dance organisations are closing down.
They're all crumbling at the moment. Everybody's is a terrible state going on. Look, As our listeners know, I'm standing in for the House of Reps in Dunkley. I'm the only one in Victoria. We're broadcasting probably to a lot of members of Dunkley from RPP. But if you're not in Dunkley, what else can you do?
Oh, well, the key thing is this is all this party has been crowdfunded since the beginning, so it's about normal Australians putting their hand up and saying, yes, I want to stand up for this and do something about it. Standing up for that could, in the number one way, on the 2nd of July, is to volunteer. And we've got people across the country who are going to be heading to their nearest polling station, and we're sending them T-shirts, flyers, signs, and basically it's just to spend half a day basically giving out flyers would be an amazing help for us. Because that is the best way of getting people to know that they can support the arts when they go in and vote, rather than having to come across it on the ballot paper. The more people that know that they can support the arts at the election before they walk in, the better. And the best place and the best time to do that is right outside the polling booths across the country.
Fantastic. And they can also vote for the Senate, of course.
Well, absolutely. Mm. That's it. Yeah, exactly. There's Senate candidates for the arts in every state in the country, and we'll be an above-the-line option there. So, again, really important to that. That potentially is, an independent senator for the arts. That would be an amazing thing for Australia, completely outside of any of this left-right ideology stuff. We're like a non-political party. we're looking for results, evidence-based results. They're going to get the best deal for Australians across the board. And basically, you know, we will endorse and celebrate the best ideas from all parties, and we will criticise the worst ideas from all parties. You know, but bottom line is we just want to get the best result for Australia.
I will put links up on the page, on our Facebook page for the program, and if anybody wants to volunteer or get some more information, contact me. Thank you so much for talking to us today, PJ. We'll be in touch again very soon.
Wonderful. Thank you, Sally.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, bye.
And
now it's time for John On.
So it is, and coincidentally, here I am.
Not so coincidentally, John.
Really?
No, we've all worked to get you here.
Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera,
who are
coming to Sydney, that'll be very popular.
Of course it will.
And particularly because of Frida Kahlo, and she is just simply one of the world's most popular artists.
Yeah.
Not so when she was alive, as it turns out. She was sort of pretty well regarded as Diego Rivera's difficult wife.
Yes.
While she was alive. I think that all changed in quite, you know, well, she died in 1954, about 3 weeks before I was born.
Did she?
And then it wasn't till the 70s, the mid-70s, that there were shows of her work starting to become popular. I think the countercultural movement found something in it, and she's been very well known ever since. Whereas Diego has kind of drifted away a little. He was world famous when he was working.
Yes, he was. It's interesting, isn't it? Because he was extremely prolific, but I guess there was a very kind of provincial message, political message for him, which was really about Mexico.
Yeah, and it had a lot to do with, it was very contemporary, it was contemporaneal.
Yeah, that's right. Whereas I think perhaps the issues that Frida Kahlo discussed in her work were much more about the human state of being, weren't they?
Indeed.
Philosophical, yeah.
But regardless of all that, I'm sure that people will flock along to have a look at all of that. Diego's work was mainly murals. So we'll see what they drag out of the world of movable art and take to Sydney.
When I was in San Francisco recently, and as I mentioned before, that I saw a couple of the works. One of the work, there were a few of his paintings in the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, and one of them was a very surrealist piece, which
The surrealists were very keen on both of them.
Yes, I didn't realize that.
Embrace them as part of the surrealist movement, but neither of them were interested in the surrealists. So no. They didn't want to go in that direction. They were communists.
Yeah, of course.
Highly political.
Yes.
Not unlike yourself, Sally.
No. Well...
I don't know about the communist bit.
It's a new facet of my personality that I'm only just discovering, John.
Now, listen, Frida Kahlo.
Frida Kahlo. Back to
I was at a dinner party some years ago in Rye.
Mm. Is this the segue?
Yeah. And Bridget Thomas turned up.
Yes.
And... she had flowers in her hair and a very floral outfit on and was looking surprisingly like Frida Kahlo.
I can imagine her looking like Frida Kahlo, actually.
I had a bit of willow charcoal in my pocket, as I often do.
Yeah.
And I drew a single eyebrow across Bridget's forehead. And she looked remarkably like Frida Kahlo.
Yeah.
By the end of the evening... we all had single eyebrows across the...
I call that the monobrow.
The monobrow, yeah. And Amanda and I got, well, frankly, we got plastered and stayed the night.
Mm.
And I remember with delight waking in the morning on a sunny morning, opening one eye and looking out of the bed, and there was the golden retriever with a single black eyebrow.
It is definitely one of her defining features, Frida Kahlo,
indeed.
Isn't it? That brow.
Yeah, indeed it is.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Now, I believe that you're going to, in a minute, give Mark Stewart a call.
Let's give him a call.
Let's give him a call. Well, while we do, we're going to have it listen to a little bit of Love Train by the 3 Degrees because it is such a great track. And we'll get him on the phone as quickly as we can.
A couple of weeks ago, Sally, you were away. I'm not sure what you were doing, traversing the earth somewhere.
Looking at Frida Kahlo in San Francisco.
There you go.
Probably.
And while you were away, I had Mark Stewart come in and keep me company in here.
Mm.
And we had a bit of a chat about a number of things. And Mark's on the line now because he's taken his broad experience of art after 30 years living on the other side of the world out to the MPRG to have a look at the country and western show out there, and we'll see whether or not he's got anything to say about it. Are you there, Mark?
Yes, John, I'm here. Good
how
morning.
Are you?
Fantastic.
Good morning.
Welcome
to
you. To the team, Mark.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you.
Now, how was it out there at the MPRG? Did you stroll in the door and they were all standing there as a team with their arms outstretched?
Not exactly. It was a very quiet Sunday, a bit wet, I think. Wasn't exactly the perfect day for a lot of people, but it was great for me because the gallery was empty.
Right.
But, no, they were very welcoming, and it's a very good exhibition. It's worth seeing.
Yeah, I had a look. I thought it was good too. It's it's fairly broad in its view of how Australians look at their own landscapes. And there's some work in there that I found very strong and very moving, actually. Mm.
Well, perhaps we had the same experience, John. But anyway, before we speak about that, I'd just like to mention our visit to the McClellan Gallery.
Oh, okay.
And our meeting with John Cunningham, the new Irish and young director from Donegal.
Yeah. Oh, yes. We've had him on the show. He's lovely, isn't he?
He is. He's very good. And he has some very interesting plans for the gallery and the garden. So we wish him all the best with that.
Indeed. He's a firecracker. I'm sure he can get on with that.
Exactly. Which brings me back to the MPRG and its rather bare park, I think badly in need of trees and shrubs. You know, the rose gardens and the lake and resident geese are lovely, but I hope Greg Hunt or Mornington Shire Council is listening. That garden needs some help.
Okay. So, all right, well, that's the outside of the building, Mark.
Let's try to envelop everything, John. So to the exhibition, which is it's a rather unfortunate title, I think, Country and Western, with not a boot, hat or horse in sight, except in Norm McKenna's Upper Hunter picture two, where there are two horses up to something unmentionable along community radio.
Right.
But the curator, Gavin Wilson, has put together a really clean, tight exhibition.
Oh, that's good to hear.
I think it's not easy, and he's done a very good job, because as each painting melds into its neighbour, it creates a continuity of styles and movement from one painting to the next, which is, I think, quite well done. And the catalogue is also well made and discusses clearly and succinctly each painting, which I won't have the time to do, of course, but I'm going to talk about what grabbed my eyes, whether they were good or bad, the paintings, not
yes,
the eyes.
Yes, go ahead.
Although I just want to mention that apparently our eyes only see a third of an object perceived and our brain fills in the other two-thirds, hence the importance of interpretation.
Wow, yeah.
Do that?
Right. I'm only seeing a third of Sally at the moment.
You are. You're filling in the rest, John, so I hope you're doing it well.
Well, I hope you're doing a good job, John.
So anyway, to the show. And it starts with John Golding's large aerial photos of Mount Newman, the abandoned mine, which are very evocative, not only for their abstract beauty, but for their obvious environmental reasons. Then it moves on to Tracy Moffat's not very interesting Invocation, which looks like an image taken from a lifestyle magazine.
Yeah, I sort of struggled with that one myself.
Yeah.
It looked like she'd sort of turned a photograph into a pastel drawing.
Exactly,
or something.
It was exactly what she'd done. I think I've often thought she was overrated.
Right.
And it doesn't measure up to the others, especially William Robinson, who I don't know. William Robinson, but I was very
impressed. Sydney artist, William Robinson, and I don't think he's as well known down here as he is in Sydney.
I see. Mm. I was very impressed by his those earth and sea colour lithographs,
right,
which reminded me in their compact power of early Piet Mondrian seascapes,
right,
and some of the small, exquisite John Constable weather sketches, which, if anyone ever gets a chance to see them, they're just magnificent.
Hmm.
Then there is the Shane Fitzgerald wonderfully coloured seascape Duraflex print next to Ronnie Jimba's superb painting called Bushfire, which I think you also enjoyed.
Yeah,
it's
I did.
Massive line giving out heat.
Yeah.
Sort of painting you could put on your wall and you know, stand in front of it and get warm.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the small drawings and wood blocks and lino cuts, of which there were a number.
Yes.
And they're all, in my opinion, exquisite. I just really enjoyed every one of them for some reason. I think after having looked at some grander work, I found the smaller works somehow more engaging.
More intimate, yeah. Hmm. I think that's something that Gavin Wilson did very well. He's made a show which is, you can move from one painting to the next or from one print to the next, and there's nothing pretentious about it. It's one of those shows that's really good, and it sort of sings to you somehow.
Oh, that's that's fantastic to hear that. Mm. Now, I have a confession to make. I'm sorry, Mark, but I've gone a little over this week and we're running out of time. We would love to hear some more of your musings on various exhibitions around if you're interested in keeping this up. This is really
fantastic. Send the RWP limo over to
pick you up and take you out to another one. But I'm going to have to cut you off. I'm so sorry.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. So I'll be around. Don't you worry.
That's brilliant.
Right,
and it sounds
day.
Like you'd recommend that people should get down and see that exhibition.
That show, and also the there's just quickly David Crooks at the Acme in town.
Yes.
The videos of train tracks. It's a brilliant show.
Oh,
very, very much
okay.
All right.
Fantastic. Thanks
excellent.
So much for talking to us.
All right. Lots of love.
See
thanks,
you soon.
Mark.
Bye, John. Bye,
Sally.
Hey, Cliff Allen, caster of Pearls, has a few to fling at us, I hope, this morning from his clifftop perch. Good morning, Cliff, and how are you this morning?
Good morning, Sally. I'm okay.
Oh, only okay. That sounds
morning,
very
Cliff.
Very circumspect. What's
no,
going on?
No, it's strange, really. I mean, come on, do a bit of radio. But it's not like a theatre, is it, where you can do your voice production exercises before you come on.
No, not exactly.
You're sitting here quietly and all of a sudden you have to talk.
All of a sudden you're on. Yeah,
you
there's no
well
prep.
You be coughing for 5 minutes.
Well, you do a very good job of it, Cliff, I have to say.
And Sally talked about her political stuff.
Yes, I have.
Have you?
Yes, I've come out, Cliff.
Have we talked about Mr. What's his name? Bill Shorten's art policy?
No, we haven't talked about his art policy. We've talked about trying to alert the general public to question what's going on in the arts and hopefully to enable the arts party to get a bit of a voice to agitate a little so that people like Bill Shorten and like the Greens have to qualify their policies.
Well, the Greens can really come up with anything, can't they? Not going to get elected.
No, that's right.
Whether you like them or not, that's a fact of life.
Yeah,
political life.
What they can do is point things and make it clear to everybody, as is the mandate for the Arts Party, that we don't have to accept actually what the two binary parties are feeding us. At least the Labor Party have got much more interest in the arts, it seems, than the Liberal Party do.
Well, it seems. I'm not you know, I'm not a great believer in the word mandate. I've seen enough of that before. But the Labor, yeah, well, they've promised a few things, haven't they?
Yeah, they have.
72 million cut over 4 years from the Australia Council budget will be put back in.
60 million funding for the ABC and
yeah, 60 million is not enough.
No, it's definitely not, but it's better than.
But they've had such dreadful cuts lately that basically the ABC's run from Sydney rather than Melbourne.
Yeah.
Although there were two ABC. Well, they're not ABC. There was a new one, Clever Man.
Oh, yes, I haven't seen that. I meant to watch that last week. Did you see it?
Yeah, it's an Indigenous sci-fi thriller.
Yeah, it's a Superman or superhero.
They announced a second series before the first episode of the first series was on, so they must be pretty confident about it.
Oh, I hope
so. You know, it's set in Australia, very near future, story of the ancient hairy people who emerged within our society to great persecution. And they're sort of in a co-op with the Aboriginal people. Stars Hunter Page, Lockhart, and Rob Collins as two very different brothers. One looks like he's a bit of a crook. Jack Charles was in the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
He died. Now, I could say that because people will know by now. Directed by Wayne Blair. But look, I saw it. It looks really good.
Oh, good.
It was really strange. I was watching Game of Thrones.
And
we have this English fellow that has been protecting the Dragon Lady for, you know,
forever and a day. Yeah.
And here he is in this sci-fi thriller, Clever Man.
Oh.
And he's the boss of the, the newspaper.
Hairy? Oh, okay.
And then there's another one which is called Secret City, and that's from Screen New South Wales and Screen Canberra. Plus Foxtel, which is, it's also got another Englishman come out, an ex-old Bill actor in one of the lead roles. Well, who knows, brainwashing type show.
Right, okay.
Secrecy, ultra secrecy. Also looks good. So it's good to see, but that's on BBC, I think it's on BBC 2 Foxtel. But two new shows, both very promising.
We also, of course, Cliff, have Rake back on.
Oh, is Rake back
on? The new episodes of Rake, yeah.
Really? Is it a third series?
Yep.
Really?
Fantastic. Best show of the week, Rake.
Oh, funny. I'm going to have a look at that. Yes, I love that. Richard Roxburgh.
It's great. I love Rake. But, and the acting's good in Rake, you know. I think in the other one I mentioned, Secret City, I've seen about 4 actors that shouldn't be there, but still, the rest of them are all right.
Mm.
But Rake, all of them are good.
Nice to watch, I'm sure, Cliff. Nice for you to watch Rake when watching Rake himself getting into almost as much trouble as I'm sure you do.
Well, Richard Roxburgh is going to New York to do a Shakespeare.
Is he?
Yeah.
What's he going to play?
On Broadway. He and he's with Kate Blanchett.
Yeah.
And what are they doing, do you know?
I can't remember the name of the show, but they're going to New York. Production company at the Arts Centre, Funny Girl, The Life and Loves of Fanny Bryce, Curtains from Candor and Ebb, the musical comedy Who Done It, and Dusty. That's from 23/7 until 29/11. Performers include Carol O'Connor, David Hobson, Todd McKinney, Nancy Hayes, Simon Gleeson, and directed by that fellow that directs them all. I think it's called Simon Phillips, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bookings are now open for those shows. Probably all three, if you like, or something. But those people that love those sort of shows, I should see. There's a new mini-series being made up in Brisbane at the moment about Paul Hogan, why they would want a mini-series. Oh. Fancy sitting down to write a mini-series.
I think a mini-series is pushing it a little bit too far, that's I've got to tell you.
I just have the idea of these writers sitting down. What are we going to say about Paul? A mini-series.
That means they've got a lot of material.
Yeah, well, it also means I'll just replay
a lot of all the old stuff.
Comic stuff, that's all.
Yeah.
The Beast, that's not until August in Melbourne, written and starring Eddie Perfect. Directed again by Simon Phillips.
The Beast, that's right, I'm looking forward to that.
Eddie Perfect was on a half-hour comedy show after Mad as Hell the other about 3 weeks ago. He's not a great actor, by the way.
Well, I rather liked him playing Alexander Downer in Keating, I've got to
say. He was fantastic as Alexander Downer in Keating.
Now, I'm very pleased to have read in your blog, Cliff, that you're going to vote for the Arts Party.
Well, I can vote for the Arts Party in the Senate.
Yes, not, you can. You can't vote. That's no, right. You can't vote
I've
for it
to
the House of Reps.
I've got to vote for handsome Greggy Hunt, which I will not vote for.
No, well, still, I do hope not.
If there's a sex party down there, I'll be voting sex party.
That's
but,
good to hear.
And then in the Senate, I'll do the arts one, of course, yeah. Number one.
What's the what's your blog address again for our listeners?
www.lollo8.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to put another link on that up on
no,
our
you
Facebook
don't have
page.
To,
now, I wasn't able to find you. There's a special song for you today. You asked for Billie Holiday, but I couldn't get that particular track. That
well,
you found
it's probably a good idea. It's very sad. I more or less put it up because the politics at the moment are so, you know, low key. Although, I mean, it'd be nice if Billy Shorten got in with his arts policy, but we all know he won't get in. Oh. I mean, Mr. Turnbull
don't
will definitely
say that.
Get. Well,
oh,
it's true.
Cliff, don't ruin my day. Now,
it's
so
a
what
lay
I did,
down, Miss Eyre.
Now, stop it. Okay. Now, what I did find for you was another one of Billie Holiday's tracks, and it's Billie's Blues, it's called. So we're going to play a little
Billie's
bit of that.
Good. Yeah. But it's, the connection was political.
Yeah. Okay. So thanks for coming in.
Lovely.
Great
Hello,
to talk
John,
to you as
and
always.
Goodbye, John.
See you, Cliff. Have a lovely day.
Oh, fantastic today. Yeah, it's Sunday. Isn't it a beautiful day? Yeah.
It's time for the news.
I was looking for my glasses just then, Sally, so I could find my headphones.
So you could find the microphone.
I've got them all on.
Idiot. Now, as Mark Stewart recommended, Country and Western Landscape Reimagined is on at the MPRG. It
really
like
is
a fantastic
it's
exhibition.
One of the best shows I've seen there in some time.
Wow, that's really good.
It's a travelling show going around various regional galleries and definitely worth a trip down there and have a look. And the whole gallery is full of it.
Fantastic. I think it's on until the 3rd of July, so there's a little bit of time.
Dark mofo, Sally.
Woohoo! I'm going next week, John.
Yes.
I'm so excited.
Are politicians allowed to go to dark mofo?
Oh, arts politicians are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, definitely. Christian Wagstaff's House of Mirrors is in there. And in fact, just this morning, I booked myself some transport to go out and see Asylum, Mike Parr's installation out at an old asylum out in Hobart.
Great. Quite old asylums are great places.
Yeah. Matthew Fagan's on with Daniel Tocheri at St. John's Church, Sunday the 19th of June. And you can go to Matthew/Fagan's website and get tickets for that.
If you go to the FAC website, the FARC website, you'll get information there about their the annual exhibition. And they've got a contest, haven't they? They've got a prize going where you can enter, you can put something in.
Yep.
And the prize is to have an exhibition with them.
Yeah, so that's fantastic. Yeah. So talk to Miller down there at the FAC. Australian Horror Story is on. It's from the Green Room award-winning team that brought you The Beautiful Losers, of which I am a great fan, Mark Jones, Carla Zaid and Aurora Kurth. And it is just a little bit politically incorrect, apparently. It's part of the Cabaret Festival, which runs between the 14th and the 26th of June. If you go to the Melbourne Cabaret Festival website and look for Australia Horror Story, you will be able to get tickets for that, which is on the 17th and 19th. To the 19th of June.
You know who else has got a website?
Who?
The Arts Party.
The Arts Party has a website. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Have a look at the Arts Party website. My Facebook page too. And if you think that it's about time our government heard our voices, it's important that you lend your voice to us. The arts are very important to all of us and how much they contribute to our culture, our economy and our better selves. So please share it around and help spread the word. I can't say it enough. The Arts Party, the Arts Party, the Arts Party. We need your voices.
I don't think that there is anyone who would say, if you ask them, are the arts important to you? There aren't many people who are going to say no.
Well, you wouldn't think so, no, but our politicians are voting that way, are creating policy that
demonstrates that. Let's start behaving like it.
If you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About. You can catch up with the show via podcast, which should appear on the station website sometime during the week, but it's repeated Wednesdays at 12. You'll find a link to our Facebook page on the RPP website. Join us again 11 o'clock next Sunday. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art,
but we do know what we like, Sally. I know, yeah. Brody knows what
he likes. Brody, yeah. Thanks, Brody.
Thank you, Brody.